We've been studying from the period of the Exodus, and it's been just very fertile ground, I think, for lessons and applications. And so tonight we're going to have another one of those, and I hope you're not getting tired of that because I'm having fun with it. And what we've looked at is recently, in recent lessons, we looked at the miracle of the rock that the water came out of, and we saw that that was actually a foreshadowing of Christ. We saw the bread that came down from heaven. We saw that was actually a foreshadowing of Christ. And so it's kind of amazing how all these details end up being fulfilled completely in Jesus. And we also have been making the point as we go along that Israel was very much like a son who God was raising up from birth as a nation. As a people, they were like a child to him that he called out of Egypt. And in fact, he says this very specifically. For instance, in Exodus 4, when he sends Moses to go tell Pharaoh to let my people go, right before the plague of the death of the firstborn, the last of them, he said, "You shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my firstborn son. And I say to you, let my son go that he may serve me." So this is the God of the universe saying to Pharaoh, that's my son you've got, and you let him go. And he follows that up by saying, if you don't, I'm going to kill your firstborn son. And so Israel is a son to God. And then as he brought him out, as he brought called Israel, his people out, God had to teach them so many things. And remember the passage in Hosea that we've looked at a couple of times where God says in Hosea 11, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. And the more they were called, the more they went away, and they kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by their arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of kindness, with bands of love. I became to them as one who eases the yoke on their jaws, and I bent down to them and fed them. To borrow a word from Shannon's lesson a few weeks ago, this is, we could say, bittersweet. You see the sweetness of the love of God and his tenderness and his compassion and how he, you know, it's a very tender scene that's described here as he's leading them by the arms. But the bitter side of it is they rebelled against him and they kicked against him and they did not learn the lesson. And over they failed to trust, and over they failed to obey. And so there's several lessons that can be learned from this. And tonight what I want to look at is a passage in Scripture where these very points where they failed are called out and used to remind the people to obey. And then I'm going to tie that in with some principles in the New Testament. And you won't be surprised by who fulfills it, because it's the same basic thing we've been seeing, that Jesus ends up being the one that is the ultimate answer to all these problems. So that's what we're going to look at tonight in a different lesson than we've seen so far. So first of all, I want to look at basically this is the test that they failed, take two. So they're going to be reminded of how their parents had failed, and you need to not follow in their footsteps. And this first point is going to come from the book of Deuteronomy. Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1. Deuteronomy, we're skipping ahead a little in the story. We're skipping ahead a lot in the story. So what's happened between where we were in Exodus and Deuteronomy is basically the entire wilderness wandering. Remember how long they wandered in the wilderness? 40 years. Well, so when they leave Egypt, Moses is 80 years old, and the very first thing that happened was they were thirsty and they were hungry, and God took care of those things. Then, after all the events that happened 40 years later, Moses is 120 years old. He's about to die. They're about to cross over. They're just about to enter the promised land, and that's where we pick up in Deuteronomy chapter 1. It's a new generation. It's the children of those people who had rebelled and who had failed so miserably in the beginning. And notice, just to set the scene, Deuteronomy 1 verse 1, these are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness, in the Arabah opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hezeroth, and Dizahab. In other words, this is on the other side of the Jordan. So if you can picture the little map, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, the Jordan, they're on the east side of that, and they're getting ready to cross into the promised land, and Moses can't go. We'll get to that in another lesson. He's not allowed to enter. So he gives them this speech, and basically the entire book of Deuteronomy is Moses' farewell address and last speech, and he's reminding them of the law, and he's instructing this new generation, don't blow it like your mom and dad did. Don't blow it like they did. But when you go in there, you remember who God is. And so with that in mind, turn to chapter 6. And we'll look at some of the lessons that Moses warned them to learn. Chapter 6, verses 1 through 3 says, This is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments that which I command you all the days of your life, that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in a land flowing with milk and honey. So first point is, when you get over there, you listen and you obey. Just do what God says. Go by his rules that I've giving to you in this second giving of the law. Then he warns them not to forget God. When you get over there, don't forget. Notice verses 10 through 15. When the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to give you, with great and good cities that you didn't build, houses full of all good things you didn't fill, cisterns that you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees you did not plant, when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. It is the Lord your God you shall fear. Him you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are around you, for the Lord your God in your midst is a jealous God, lest the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you and he destroy you from off the face of the earth. So when you get over there, don't forget God. You remember God and you serve only him, and don't fall for these idols around. Then he reminds them of the incident of the water from the rock in verses 16 through 18. He says, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test as you tested him at Massah. You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, his testimonies, his statutes, which he commanded you. Now you might say, well, what was Massah? I'm sure they hadn't forgotten. But here's what happened at Massah. This is where Moses struck the rock the first time. Behold, I will stand before you, God tells Moses, on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, and the people will drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel, and they called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarreling of the people of Israel and because they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us or not? And Moses says, look, don't do that again. When you guys go over there, don't do what your parents did. Don't challenge God. Don't put God to the test. Trust in God. Don't do this. Don't fall for the same mistake that they made at Massah where they put God to the test. And then one more warning. Turn over to chapter 8. And we'll look at one more warning. Begin verse 1. The whole commandment that I command you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land that the Lord swore to give your fathers. And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you in these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. So Moses says, now look, remember this lesson. God, remember, let you hunger. He brought you out, and he allowed you to experience hunger, and then he fed you. And he was doing all of that to test you to see if you would obey his words, because that's more important than anything. You recall back in Exodus 16 when that happened. This is the lesson we looked at recently. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. Just like in the garden, and just like many other times, God says, I'm going to just shower blessings from heaven on you, and then I'm going to give you a rule, and I'm going to find out, are you going to obey or are you not going to obey? And so from here, he literally says, I'm going to rain bread out of the sky. It's going to be, I'm going to take care of these people, but I'm going to give them a test. And I'm going to find out, are they going to listen? Are they not going to listen? So these are the lessons that Moses says you need to learn. How well had Israel done on all four of these principles in the wilderness? They had failed miserably. Isaiah says, years and years and years later, I spread out my hands all the day to a rebellious people who walk in a way that is not good, following their own devices, a people who provoke me to my face continually, sacrificing in gardens and making offerings on bricks. This is God speaking through Isaiah. Hundreds of years later, they never learned it. The original son of God, the original children that he called out, failed miserably. Their children failed. All the way through, pretty much the entire Old Testament is a story of a rebellious people. Every now and then, they would turn it around. Every now and then, they would have a shining moment where they repented and they called out to God and they cast away their idols. But for the most part, they didn't do very well. For the most part, they rebelled. For the most part, they complained. They didn't have faith. They continually went after these other gods. They did everything Moses told them not to do. They did that from the moment they left Egypt all the way through. They really struggled to ever be the kind of son who God wanted. Which leads us to another son. God had another son who was obedient. And what's fascinating, when you turn to Matthew, turn to the book of Matthew, what's fascinating is that over and over, Jesus passed the tests that the first firstborn son, Israel, failed. So God said, Israel is my firstborn son, and I'm bringing him out. And then his firstborn son, as he said in Hosea, rebelled over and over and over against him. So he had another son. This firstborn son is Jesus, and he is going to show the way that it should have been all along. Now, let's look at some parallels just to get the story started. In Matthew chapter 2, do you remember that when Jesus was when he was first born, Herod was going to kill all the babies? And so the angel said, get up and get out of here. And Joseph and Mary ran down to where? Egypt. And when Herod died, look at verses 14 to 15. He rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt. And he remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what God had spoken by the prophet. Out of Egypt I called my son. What prophet said that? We've already read it. It was Hosea chapter 11, verse 1, that God said, out of Egypt I called my son. It's that very passage where he says, I led him by the arms and taught him to walk. The same prophecy was fulfilled in Jesus. Now what's fascinating about that is, probably about the time that Joseph and Mary left Egypt to travel back home, Jesus was probably a toddler. And so it's a very interesting picture how literally God brought Israel out of Egypt and taught them to walk. And about the time Jesus would have been about that same age, he came out of Egypt. And Matthew says this fulfills, see, this is the pattern. This Jesus is doing basically what Israel did. Do you remember in 1 Corinthians 10, Paul said that God brought them out of Egypt and they were all baptized in the cloud and in the sea. And then, you know, they drank from the rock that followed them. The rock was Christ. So after God brings them out of Egypt, what's the very next thing that happens? They pass through the Red Sea and they're, as Paul puts it, they are baptized in the sea. What's the next thing that happens in the life of Jesus? Skip over the part about John. Turn to chapter 3 of Matthew. In verse 13 through 15, then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to John to be baptized by him. And John would have prevented him, saying, I need to be baptized by you, and if you come to me. But Jesus answered him, let it be so for now, for thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he consented. So God called his son out of Egypt. The very next thing Matthew tells us is he was baptized, which is exactly what happened to the first Israel, the first firstborn son, Israel. And then what happened with Israel? After they came out of Egypt and after they were baptized in the sea, what was the next thing that happened? They were led into the wilderness and they got hungry and God tested them. What's the next thing that happens in the life of Jesus? Chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. See how all that lines up just perfectly? And you remember what we learned in Terry's class on Wednesday night? That Matthew was written to, with a Jewish audience in mind. He introduces Jesus as the son of David, the son of Abraham. And so Matthew is laying out these parallels that for a Jewish point of view, looking at the history of Israel, Jesus is the firstborn son that God never had. He's the obedient son that God never had. Israel was God's firstborn son who rebelled against him and failed and didn't trust and didn't obey. Jesus is the firstborn son who was faithful and true and obedient. Now, in this testing in the wilderness, the parallels just keep on going. And you're going to be amazed by what happens. So Satan is going to test Jesus. He's going to give him three tests. And I don't think Satan realizes the way that he's playing into God's hand in the way all of this works out. But Satan, after Jesus is hungry for 40 days and 40 nights, Satan comes along and he says in verse 3 of Matthew chapter 4, the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. It's always been an interesting test to me. I've never really fully understood it because we wonder, well, what would have been wrong with that? I mean, he hadn't eaten in 40 days. Why couldn't he do that? What would be wrong with it? Well, whatever it is, I don't know what the rules were about how Jesus could and could not use his power, but Jesus understood the test. He understood whatever it was Satan was asking him to do went against what he was supposed to be doing, and that wouldn't have been right. And so Jesus responds with a quote in verse 4. He answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Do you recognize the quote? We've read it already. It's from Deuteronomy chapter 8. This was the last passage in Deuteronomy that we looked at. When Moses was reminding the people, don't do what your parents did. He said, he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Satan said, turn these rocks to bread. Jesus says, no, and he quotes this verse. He had been led out. He had been allowed to hunger. The point for Israel was to trust in God. What they didn't do was trust in God. And God gave them instructions, and they didn't obey. And Moses says, don't forget this lesson, which they never got, but Jesus did. And so Jesus shows that he was faithful where God's firstborn son Israel was not. Let's look at the next test. In the next test, Satan seems to say, well, two can play this scripture quoting game. Satan apparently knows some scriptures too, and so he throws out a couple of them. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 5, then the devil took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. Again, he says, if you are the Son of God, it's as if Satan is testing Jesus' resolve and his faith and him, and even his own identity as the Son. Well, if you really are, prove it. Well, this sounds like a test of Jesus. It sounds like a test of something that, about Jesus and himself. But Jesus saw it for what it really was. It wasn't actually a test of Jesus. Who was it a test of? It was a test of God. And Jesus says, you're not supposed to do that. And so notice what Jesus says in verse 7. Jesus said to him again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Do you recognize that quote? We read it already. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 16. Moses told the people, do not put your Lord to God to the test as you tested him at Massa. Remember what happened at Massa? That was the place where he struck the rock. And he called the name of the place Massa at Meribah because the quarreling of the people of Israel, because they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us or not? Israel was there and they're getting thirsty and say, well, is God here or is he not here? What were they doing? They were putting God to the test. It's not our place to put God to the test. It's his place to put us to the test. But we don't get to say to God, well, show yourself. Prove yourself. Are you there or are you not there? That was showing a lack of faith on their part. And by Satan saying to Jesus, if you're really God's son, just toss yourself off of here and do what? Test God. See if he'll do what he said. And Jesus says, I'm not going to do it. And he quotes from this same speech of Moses where Moses said, don't make that mistake again. From the very lesson that we've already looked at from the striking of the rock of the water. One more test to go in the life of, in this testing in the wilderness of Jesus. Matthew chapter 4, verse 8. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Could he do that? I assume he could. If he couldn't, it wouldn't be a test, would it? If he couldn't do it, it wouldn't be much of a temptation. Elsewhere, Satan is called the god of this world. And so, if indeed he has that kind of ability, I suppose he could give Jesus all the things that earth has to offer. And in a way, if you think about it, this is Satan pushing all the chips on the table, isn't it? I mean, he doesn't have anything else to offer. He's given him everything he can possibly give to a human being. What else would there be besides all the glory of all the kingdoms of the world? What else could you pile on top of that if you were trying to sweeten the deal? That's it. That's all he can offer him. He's offering him the whole thing. And of course, what does Jesus say? Verse 10, be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and him only you shall serve. Recognize it? We read it already. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Take care when you go in, you have all these things, that you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. It is the Lord your God you shall fear, you shall serve him, and by his name you shall swear. All three of these "it is written"s come from Deuteronomy 6 and Deuteronomy 8, where Moses is reminding the people of how they had failed in the wilderness, and he's telling the next generation, don't make those mistakes. What did they do? They made the same mistakes. Over and over and over. What did it finally take? The true Son of God, the firstborn Son, who was called out of Egypt, who was baptized, who was led into the wilderness and was tested, and he passed every test that Israel failed. He was faithful where they were faithless. He was obedient where they were rebellious. And in fact, remember that Hosea said they failed over and over. He said, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing, but they never got it right. And so it was up to Jesus to come and to do it once and for all. And in fact, couldn't we say, as we look at our own lives and temptations, that we've pretty well messed it up too, just like Israel did. And in that way, Jesus fulfills the statement that was made in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. We do not have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but in every way was tempted like us, except without sin. All the temptations that you've fallen for and I've fallen for, Jesus faced those same temptations. Where we failed, he passed. Where we gave in, he was strong. He was faithful to God. He was the one Son of God who was always faithful and never rebelled against God. And so it's a fascinating thing to say that this Son of God was the one who was the ultimate fulfillment of righteousness. And in all these ways that Israel had rebelled, he was the opposite of that. What conclusion can we draw from that? Well, pretty much we're going to have to choose what kind of son are we going to be. So then it's like, we're now like those people that Moses was talking to. And he says, look at what your parents did. Look at what the previous generations have done. They were not the son God wanted. Jesus came and he was the son, the exact son that God was looking for. And now we have to decide which kind of son am I going to be. And you remember that Paul said in that same passage I referred to, 1 Corinthians 10, that they were baptized in the sea, they drank from the rock. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased. For they were overthrown in the wilderness. That was written down as examples for us that we might not desire evil as they did. Paul says the same thing Moses did. Paul preached the same sermon Moses did. He says, look at how they failed and learn from their mistakes. Look where they went wrong and you don't do it. And now we have two sons to look at. We have Israel and we have Jesus. And we have to decide, who am I going to be like? Jesus shows us how it can be done. He shows us how we can turn away from temptation, how we can say no to Satan, how we can remember that there's something more important than immediate, fulfillment of desires and satisfaction, and there's something more important than the pride of life, and that what's, we have to hunger for the bread of God and live by His word. Jesus shows us how it's done. We have Him to follow as a role model, as the trailblazer, as the one who was faithful to God, or we can look at Israel who failed over and over, and I'm sure it's obvious, of course, which son we want to be like. I'm sure this week, here we are on the first day of the week, and it's about over now. Maybe even this evening, we're going to face some temptation. It strikes all of us in different ways. Probably none of us will get through this week without some sort of test. When that test comes, think about these two sons of God. The one who never could quite get it right, and the one who always chose to be obedient. And you live like the Son of God, Jesus. And let's be His children. Let's be obedient. Let's be the kind of Son of God that He's looking for. Even today, for the rest of the day, and this week. If you're here and you need to make your life right, and there's some way that we can help you, just let us know now as we stand and sing.